Thank you very much. After this introduction, I even want to hear what I have to say. Breshut, Rabbi Chancellor, rabbis, ladies and gentlemen, cherished colleagues, right, Rabbi, I'd like to acknowledge my mechutanim who are present. Rabbi Cutler, my esteemed colleague, mentioned Rabbi Shlomo Gurin, which makes me want to relate to an anecdote. When he traveled to America for the first time, he was met by a fellow from AIPAC, whose name is Jerry, I don't know his last name, and Jerry was to introduce him to the United States President. And Rabbi Gurin was particular that he be introduced as Chief Rabbi Gurin and Brigadier General Gurin. And this fellow Jerry was very uncomfortable with saying Chief Rabbi Gurin and Brigadier General Gurin, but Rabbi Gurin was insistent. And he kept thinking it was so haughty to say this, but there was no way out. He said, Mr. President, I wish to introduce to you Chief Rabbi Gurin and Brigadier General Gurin. And Rabbi Gurin said to the President, you see, Mr. President, in Israel, we have to have two jobs to earn a living. I'd also like to comment on my esteemed colleague when he spoke about the plethora of organizations and how it's growing, and the numbers are even greater than you said. MIR, for example, is over 9,000 students. But I just want to give you, if I may, a little bit of a historical perspective. At the time of the Holocaust, there were three poorly attended Masifta high schools in America. There was not one girls' school. The number of boys learning at Yeshiva Lev in Israel was under 500. So the growth is just absolutely incredible. It's a rejuvenation that has no parallel in history. Finally, on to our subject. 24 years ago, we produced our first film. So I was in America, and I had already hired a director, and we'd finished the casting. And now ahead of me was the august challenge of raising the funds, which were very significant. So I got a break, and I was going to make a presentation before a corporate, a corporate sponsorship. I neglected to mention my how proud I am to be part of the 70 for 70. So it's a tremendous honor for me. I'm really happy to be part of this. Back to our story. So now I had an opportunity, and I had to make a presentation the next morning in their boardroom and hand out folders explaining why we need to make this production and why it's cost effective for them. And it had to be done just right. Someone was gracious enough to afford me their office in East 23rd Street in Manhattan, and I was up all night long, typing until I got it just right and putting together the folders. And when everything was finished, I had 16 folders laid out very nicely. The words were nice. I came downstairs. I admit I was a bit tired. I open up the door to 23rd Street, and I see before my eyes the entire United States Army marching down the street in full regalia with tanks, flamethrowers, such heavy equipment. And it was raining out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, I hear, cut, cut, cut. If I wouldn't have been making a movie, I would have had no idea what was going on, is they were filming Godzilla. And they're at the chase scene, and they had production assistants at every single corner making sure there was no one interrupting. They never expected to see a guy come down in a black suit, wearing a hat, 16 folders, as they're chasing this monster in the middle of a rainstorm when it wasn't even raining. So I cost Sony $1 million. But our talk is about what I call the cast of thousands in building the land of Israel. We all encounter countervailing motifs in the cast of thousands building our land. There are some in Israel that are engaged in Torah all day long and engaged also in chesed, and others that are significantly less so. You can't deny that it hurts the ears, it even grates the ears, to hear political leaders speak about religion with derision. And yet, they are our brethren. Moreover, Rav Kook wrote that they are Chamuro Shel Mashiach. They are the donkey which will carry the Mashiach. Now, even though the donkey is thoroughly treif, innerly there is Kedusha. And there's a mitzvah of Pidyon Peter Chamor, and Rashi explains that this is a mitzvah, the only mitzvah which is given to a non-kosher animal, because they're going to be instrumental in redeeming They were instrumental in redeeming us coming out of Mitzrayim. So in the time of Rav Kook, There was major tension between the residents of the old establishment, the Yishuv, and new pioneers. And Rav Kook wrote to those who wanted to dismiss the younger generation, who had discarded all that appeared to be holy. And he said, quote, "These forces, which seem so coarse and base, are uplifted the moment they strive to build the desirable land. One can readily discern in them the glory and sanctity of Israel." I love the way he writes, "One can readily discern in them." Great people suffer from the inability to see what us mortals see all the time. I love the way great rabbis always say, "You can readily see." Rav Chaim Shmulevitz used to say that a woman has the tremendous ability to criticize her husband. And I thought to myself, it would take someone like Rav Chaim Shmulevitz to appreciate this. A number of Jerusalem's distinguished personalities once asked Rav Kook why he was able to love the sinners of Israel, even those who discarded the yoke of heaven. And Rav Kook responded, "I would rather err on the side of groundless love than on groundless hatred, God forbid." Now I'm going to go on to the writings of Rav Kook in a little bit, but I think the most instructive advice is what he gave to those delegation of rabbis who came to him to complain and bellyache. They said, "You, the chief rabbi, no less, are associated with secular pioneers who discarded all the laws of Torah." And they said, "Could it be that Eretz Yisrael will be built by and established by young men and women who publicly violate the mitzvot of Hashem and they disregard everything which is holy?" And Rav Kook responded with a story. He said, "The most holy place on earth is the temple. And even within the temple, the most sanctified part is the Kodesh HaKadashim, the Holy of Holies. And who constructed that? That was constructed by construction workers wearing jeans and overalls and muddy boots and flannel shirts. Those are the ones who built the most sanctified place, the Beit HaMikdash. I want to make this more personal. I've lived most of my life in Israel, and all the time that I've been in Israel, almost all the time I've been in Israel, which is, I'm 27, and we're talking at least, I need your wife now to do that arithmetic. We're pushing 40 years. Well, I'm talking 40, more than 40 years, even though I'm 27. And all this time, all these 40 years, I tried innumerable times to become part of the Israeli army, and I hemorrhaged days of my life trying to enlist in the army. They always rejected me, telling me, "I'm just too many children, I don't qualify." And I figured, I'm not good enough for the army, I have no interest in becoming an Israeli. And then, maybe 5 years ago, they came out with a law that you can only be a tourist for, I think, 2 years. And I had really superseded this by about 30 years. So I tried to become an Israeli citizen. And I went in numerous times to Sfarad HaPnim, to the Ministry of the Interior, and I got bounced around, and I couldn't become a citizen by virtue of the fact that to become a citizen, you have to bring a Tudat Yosher, a document that attests to the fact that you are an upright citizen, not a pedophile or any other thing. And I couldn't get such a document by virtue of the fact my hometown in America doesn't know me because for 30 years I'm living in Israel. So I fell between the cracks. So in one of my attempts, I'm in Misrad HaPnim, the Ministry of the Interior. I get bounced around from office to office. And I finally end up in this office of this elderly woman who's clearly very, very clever. And she says to me, "Shev, sit down." Before I hit ground zero, she says to me, as I'm descending, she says to me, "Kol Haredim, all the religious people, Kol Haredim Ramayim, all those really religious are deceivers. The Kol Haredim Shakranim, and all the really religious," I don't like that expression, ultra-Orthodox, it's a very demeaning term, "and all the really religious are liars." And then I still hadn't hit the ground to see yet. She said, "The Kol HaRedim Borim, and all the really religious are ignoramuses." I said, "One second here. Why exactly are we ignoramuses?" And she told me, "Atem lo yodim, lo historia, lo geografia, lo tzionut." You don't know history, geography, or Zionism. I said, "Test me." So she tested me. And she couldn't catch me in history. We moved on to geography. Geography, she couldn't catch me. We moved on to Zionism. She couldn't catch me there either. And she said, Betach ata baal tshuva. You must be a... I guess I don't have to translate that. I said, I'm working on it, but I'm not there yet. I said, one second here, now it's my turn. So let me test you. So I lost her on the Protestant Reformation in history. Then in geography, I lost her in East Africa. And then in Israel, in Sionut, I lost her on the affair. And so I wasn't even allowed to be a tourist for 3 months, and she gave me a tourist status for 5 years. So she said, I eat my hat. Well, she wasn't wearing a hat, but she was very, very impressed by my knowledge. And one other story I want to relate in this regard, and that is, I was contacted by, I think it was Mizrahi in America, in New York. I was traveling to Israel, which I do very often because I travel in both directions. And apparently, there are sofrim, there are scribes in Israel, retired individuals that have time on their hands. There are many Sifrei Torah that are pasul. And it is just too costly to repair them. But there are retired people in Israel, sofrim, that are a Mizrahi orientation, that are happy to spend their time repairing a Sefer Torah. And I was asked if I would carry a Sefer Torah. I said, my pleasure. So I'm carrying a Sefer Torah, very proud of myself, getting onto the plane. I'm flying El Al. I'm about to board the plane, and the purser comes over and he says to me, Ta'amod Batzad, stand on the side. So you don't start up with the purser. And I'm waiting there, and the plane is getting more and more full, and more full. And I'm concerned, where am I ever going to put the Sefer Torah if all the things are filled up? And I keep saying, can I come on now? He says, no, wait. Finally, the plane is all full. He says, one more minute. Then the captain and the first officer come out and they said, we wanted to escort the Sefer Torah onto the plane. So they walk me to my seat and I'm about to put the Sefer Torah on top. And he said, no. Sefer Torah doesn't travel economy. Sefer Torah goes business. So they take the Sefer Torah and I get to walk it and they, you know, bind it onto a seat in the business class. And when we landed, the same thing, I had to go off last and they wanted to escort me off. So this is part of the cast of thousands. Even if they're not so familiar, they have a soft spot. Rabbi Wein tells the story that after Israel was declared as a state, there was a convocation in Chicago's old, in the old Chicago Stadium on West Madison Street. Is that resonating?
Yes.
Okay, good. And I wish I could mimic the Chicago accent. But he describes that at the beginning of the program, Golda was the speaker. They raised the flag, and as he was going half up the rafters, everybody was already doubled over in tears. And Rabbi Wein said, very typically, as far as I'm concerned, they should have ended the program then. It was all downhill after that. And who was there at this convocation? It was the Telzers and the Kinzers and the Yeshiva people and super secular Chicago. Everybody was there, and everyone was just couldn't contain their tears seeing the flag of Israel being raised up. And I could connect very well with this because that's the generation of my father. Now, and it's not just because everyone knows Chicago is my favorite city, but I connect very well. My father was of that generation. And my father worked for the United States Army Military Intelligence in Europe after the war. And he managed to use his position to borrow a few small, tiny items from Uncle Sam, like Jeeps, platoon-sized tents, trucks, and send them on to a young nation struggling for its independence. And maybe his liberties were more affected by virtue of the fact that the woman he was courting at the time, that would be my mother, was a lieutenant in the Army, as were all whack nurses. I was just showing off. And my father then abruptly left the United States Military Intelligence to work for the Joint. He traveled to Morocco to smuggle people out of Morocco to bring them to Palestine. And he himself and that guys would travel to Israel under the guise of a military soldier, and he was packing very heavy. When he left the country, he was light, he was cold. He left his wares in Israel. My father had no passion for alcohol. But he had a special bottle of whiskey that he would use any time there was good news for Israel. Tzahal thwarted an attack. or they discovered oil. He's called me up. He said, come over, let's drink l'chaim. It was such a celebration for him. For this, he would drink whiskey. Rav Kook writes in a letter which is well known called Tuf Kuf Nun Hei, and those that are very familiar with Rav Kook's writing know this letter as Tuf Kuf Nun Hei. And it's a letter which is written to the Ritvaz. Is that name familiar to you? This is again Chicago lore. The Ritvaz, good. The Ritvaz, thank you. The Ritvaz was a rabbi, came to Chicago in 1903. Not all that much later, there was a bit of a scandal in New York, and he was asked to come and sit as Rav in New York. And he figured he wanted to go to Israel, and geographically New York's on the way, so he agreed to come to New York. Just as he arrived in New York was the Kishinev pogrom, the big daddy of the pogroms. And there are people in New York from Moldova, and they decide they're going to raise money for their brethren in Kishinev. And the method they decided, this is a comment in and of itself, was to throw a ball. And it was going to be Maidlach and Freidlach and dancing. And the custom was in those days that if you had a quote-unquote Jewish event, you invited the Rav. But how in the world? How can you invite the Rav to an event where it's men and women dancing and singing? So they had to hit upon the following scheme. They slipped him an invitation Friday afternoon just before Shabbat. This way, technically, they invited him, but no way he could change his plans and be able to show up at Motzei Shabbat. However, Motzei Shabbat, at the ball, everyone's dancing in Freidlach and Melach, and very merry. At just before 12 o'clock, the Ritvaz walks in. Shh, quiet. He goes over to the bandstand and he says, quiet. The Ritvaz goes up and he says, there was a farmer who lived out in the sticks, and he hired a malamed to teach his son. And he loved the way of this malamed because he had such unusual ways. And then he could never understand was, how is it that this malamed, each and every night, just before midnight, would sit down on the floor, remove his shoes, tilt his hat over his eyes, and say, humba jumba, humba, 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 and start crying. And he mustered the courage to tell me, what is it that you say every single night? He said, the temple is destroyed. And we want the temple to be rebuilt. And therefore we say, tikkun chatzot. The farmer got all excited. He said, could I do this also? He said, sure. He said, what do I do? He said, you just have to wake up before midnight. He said, wow, a new mitzvah. So he woke him up, he gets up, wow, a new mitzvah. Let's drink a l'chaim. Oh no, you don't drink a l'chaim. You say, tikkun chatzot, but come on. How often do we ever get a new mitzvah out here? Let's drink a l'chaim. Okay, now, focus. The temple is destroyed. We want it to rebuild. We have to be worthy and deserving. I can't believe it. A new mitzvah. Let's drink a l'chaim. No. Okay, l'chaim. Okay, now, focus. We don't have a temple. We want it to be rebuilt. Do you know how often we get a mitzvah around here? Let's drink another l'chaim. No. Okay, l'chaim. At 3:30 in the morning, the farmer's wife woke up. She found the malamed and the farmer dancing in the kitchen. Temple is destroyed. L'chaim, l'chaim, l'chaim. The temple is destroyed. Said the Ritvaz, Kishinev is destroyed. L'chaim. So this Ritvaz wrote a letter to Rav Kook, Tav Kuf Nun Hei, complaining about his heter mechira and complaining about his loose attitude toward those Jews in Israel that were not observant. And Rav Kook's response is very lengthy, and he writes, and of course I'm just telescopically condensing, he writes that Talmud Chochem should be able to discern the inner good within these sinners, and one is encouraged to ignite the good buried within them. And he said, as we alluded earlier, they are Chamuro Shel Mashiach. They are the donkey that's going to carry the Mashiach. And he writes that if you, the Ritvaz, and other Gedolim would join hands with me, and these are the key words I want to emphasize, I'd like to end. I'm not going to, but I'd like to end. But these are the key words I want to emphasize. If you would join me in reaching out to them, the name of heaven would be increased. Many of them would return in Shuvah. So the Rav Kook's words were, not only can we rebuild the state, but they would return in Shuvah. In other words, there is a cast of thousands, but we always have to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he is the director and he is the producer, and we should all be zealous to have our names listed among the cast of credits. Thank you very much.